listen closely. That's not just paint rolling on a wall. It's artistry. A master painter carefully applying Benjamin Moore Regal Select Eggshell with deftly executed strokes. The roller, lightly cradled in his hands, applying just the right amount of paint. It's like hearing poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
They always tell you on the practice field, if you don't get it right, try again. We had Lane Kiffin on earlier, and it turned into sounded like a late night fraternity party. And we're going to try again with Eli Drinkwitz, the Missouri head football coach, joining us this afternoon. Coach, how are you? It's been too long. It's great to have you back.
I'm doing great, Paul. Yeah, that was a little bit of an awkward ending there that you and Lane had. Y'all might need to hug that out at some point.
Well, I, not to get deep into. I mean, he's only. I'm going to go ahead and be a cynic now. He's only brought this up about 10 times since it happened. As you would do after being asked the same question over and over again. At some point, you just quit reacting, don't you?
Yeah, you got to move on. I think one of the things that Lane's done a great job of is he's recreated himself at Ole Miss. I don't know why he keeps digging into the past. Coach Malzahn taught me a long time ago to be a good forgiver. So, Paul, he's got to forgive you and move on. There's a lot of good things that he's doing. You know, he's got to forget about what happened at USC, man. It's just part of his past, and it's a different part of his journey moving forward.
By my count, he's had a couple of jobs since then. He's not missed too many paychecks.
I'm not going to cast any stones about having too many jobs. So.
Exactly. Well, it's great to have you with us, and we had Coach Wilkes on a couple weeks ago. Man, what an impressive hire that was. Let's start there, because he absolutely blew me away, and I know he must have done a similar thing to you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I was set out to find a defensive coordinator, the first thing I looked for was a leader of men and a motivator of players, and I think that completely describes Steve Wilkes. Obviously a tremendous man of character that's got a tremendous amount of respect. When you walk into a room and obviously knows what great defensive football looks like, has done it for a long time in the National Football League, and wanted a new challenge, wanted a new opportunity in college football, you know, to really dive in and continue to mold young men. I mean, he did a tremendous job. Obviously, you know, Roman Harper, who's one of the guys on the SEC Network, spoke very highly of him and his time with him, but there's all kinds of players in the NFL that will speak highly of what Coach Wilkes instilled in them, not only as football player, but as men. And he's done a tremendous job this spring, bringing a lot of energy to our staff, a lot of discipline to our football team. And boy, I'm excited about the growth potential that we have on the defensive side of the ball.
It seems like yesterday that we were talking, and I thought, and I think most people agreed, that your season, you know, went very well. You may not have gotten quite the wins that you were hoping for, but if we could look back for a second, what did you take away from 20?
Yeah, you know, I think we exceeded expectations. I think there was a lot of people when we saw the SEC schedule, all SEC schedule come out with what we were dealing with, the NCAA sanctions and all that stuff. To finish 5-5 in the league, I think we exceeded the expectation, but we didn't meet the standard. Obviously, moving forward, the goal of this program is to compete for the SEC East. Nobody plays football to play for second. And we're in a really good division, a really tough division, and I know, you know, at the top of that is Georgia and Florida, but we got to make room for ourselves in the SEC, and that's why I'm here. They didn't bring me here to play for sixth or seventh. We're here to try to play first. And so that's really the standard. This past year, like I said, we exceeded expectations. I think we were finished to pick last or second to last in our division. We finished third, finished sixth in the SEC. But we got to continue to improve. We're not going to get there, you know, in one major step. We got to continue to take it one bite at a time. And bringing in Coach Wilkes on the defensive side of the ball, continue to improve on the offensive side of the ball, become more explosive, score more touchdowns in the red zone, be better in situational football. If we can make those steps, I think we can put ourselves in position to contend. You know, if you look at the halftime scores against the two teams, the two top teams in the SEC East, you know, it's 21-14 against Georgia, and then we didn't show up in the second half. In Florida, we had a turnover right before halftime to make it 20-7, and we didn't show up in the second half. We got to be a team that shows up in the second half, and if we can do that, then we can make our place here in the SEC.
As you go back and review and analyze and look ahead, there could be a lot of excuses. You're not an excuse guy, but you didn't have a spring, which from most people's minds would have been a critical loss. I know everyone had the same template, but not really, especially when you're a new coach. How much did that affect you?
Well, I think it was it was the totality of the whole situation where you don't have a spring, you don't have an off season, you don't have an opportunity to put in your culture. You know, the first time you really face adversity on the football field is during the middle of the season, and so there's still just a building of trust and respect throughout the year that was a little bit tougher than probably a normal situation, but. You know, what you're learning now, there's really no excuses in sports, whether it's a worldwide pandemic or whatnot, results are what matters. And we got to get the result. And so, you know, we're another year into our program. And you know, we spent the spring just reestablishing the foundation of our culture, the foundation of our 1-0 men's mindset, you know, making sure we understand what our mindset is, what our standards, how we're going to play. You know, no BCDN, own it with no excuses, and we look forward to the opportunity and the challenge that we have ahead of us. Obviously, we've got, you know, a full year, full 12 games this coming season to really get to establish our identity. Got some out of conference games to get ourselves started, but I think, you know, obviously week two at Kentucky on the road is going to be a critical game, and we're working every single day towards that mark.
Talking to Coach Eli Drinkwitz of the University of Missouri. Coach, everyone evaluates. Everyone does it a different way. A lot of coaches will never even acknowledge that they have seen the schedule, and you've already alluded to the second week. But as you, in your own mind, I'm curious what your process is, because there's not really that much time between the season and recruiting and preparation. Do you spend much time going backwards, or is most of it devoted to moving ahead?
You know, I spent a lot of time in the month of January looking backwards and trying to figure out where did we miss, where are we short, and what do we have to do to close that gap between us and the upper echelon. And then when you see the schedule, you know, I think you have to plan. I think you have to understand what the schedule is going to be, where your bye week falls, when do you need to peak, you know, what games are going to be, you know, potential challenges late in the season without when you're probably not going to be at full strength. And I think you have to have a plan for all those scenarios. It's going to affect how you work throughout the summer, how you work through fall camp. You know, do you have the ability to be a really physical fall camp because your bye week comes early? We don't. Our bye week's week 8. So you're going to have to be smart in how physical you can prepare, because you got to have your guys healthy for the first 8 weeks of the season, and got to understand the mental grind that's going to take. So you're going to want to build in some off days prior to the start of the season so that your guys can go home. All of those things factor in, and I don't think that you can, put blinders on and say we just take it 1 week at a time. Absolutely, once it starts, you take it 1 week at a time. But they pay us a lot of money, Paul, to make sure that we look at the whole thing and have a strategy for success.
One last question on 20, because I know everyone wants to move forward, but we heard it throughout the season. You came on here often and talked about the toll on the players, mm-hmm. and you never really talked about it on yourself. But in the end, how would you describe the season of 2020? Everyone dealing with COVID, it was something I don't think anyone wants to ever go through again. But what was it like being inside that bubble, so to speak?
I think it was the most mentally taxing 8 years of my life, probably, and it's just one season. you know, Coach Malzahn has a great saying that college football ages you in dog years, and I think coaching in the SEC during a pandemic definitely ages you in dog years. I just think the stress of the unknown every single day was just something. I mean, you knew something was going to happen. We had 10 games on an all-SEC schedule, and 7 of them got changed throughout the year. We had 2 times we got changed on a Monday One time we got changed Monday at 5 o'clock to a totally new opponent. I mean, things that you never even considered in college football before occurred, and you just had to respond. I think our team, our players, our coaches are better for it, but it was definitely one of those challenging years that I hope we never have to experience again. It was a quite a learning experience, but I don't think the mental toll that it really took on you could be measured. The only thing my barber told me is he thinks I got 5 haircuts left before this thing's totally gone. And I think that, you know, I think when I started the season, I had about 12. And about 5 left, I'm joining the Paul fan club, man.
Okay, so I'm out 2 for 2 with SEC coaches coming back at me. Coach, I know I've told you this before. We always love having you on. You're so energetic, and the audience loves it. So I know you have a busy schedule, but please come back soon.
Hey, Paul, anytime, man. You're my favorite guy to get on here and shoot the crap with, man.
Well, we enjoy it as well. Be well, and all the best of spring, Coach. Coach,
bye, brother.
Eli Drinkwitz, you got it. Great to talk to you. I survived that interview better than the Kiffin interview, so you know who I'm pulling for in the future. We will take a break. More to come. 855-242-7285. Time for your calls. Seth Greenberg, bottom of the hour, previewing tonight's big games, and we are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we welcome you back. It's great to have you here. After I've talked to 2 SEC head coaches, we talked a lot of basketball, women's basketball, and one more guest, Seth Greenberg, to get you ready for tonight's game. Let's check in with Zach, who is up next. Hey, Zach. Zach, you there? I didn't hear Zach, so let me try Bill, who is in Georgia. Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Hey there.
I just want to comment on this NCAA championship.
Sure.
I didn't have no confidence in Tennessee or Missouri, so they've so up and down all year long. But I was disappointed in the Gators love. But they just get going playing too much one-on-one. And Jerry talking about these men and women. That's bad the way it is. Now, I couldn't believe it was that bad. I read an article in the Macon Telegraph this morning talking about it. I mean, it's awful. It shouldn't be like that. And as far as paying women coaches and men coaches, I'd pay in Georgia's coaches. I'd be paying Johnny Taylor more than I would Tom Green.
You know, you might not get too many people disagreeing with you on that.
I don't think so. That's why I mean, in a... And the World War II generation, that was the greatest generation, I believe. I know some of the people served in World War II. My dad and uncles and stuff. They're just different. I don't know. Gentlemen, I'd call them more.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Bill. I mean, as somebody who grew up, as you did, the son of a vet, I mean, but the world's completely different. I mean, the world changes pretty quickly now. But from the beginning of that war to the time we came around, so much had changed.
Oh yeah, and I'm gonna say something about the officiating too.
Okay,
I've been playing I've been playing basketball and watching it for 58 years, I reckon, and it's worse than I've ever seen. I don't fight the cow one way or the other. They just all.
I don't know why that is, because especially during the NCAA basketball tournament, this is the creme de la creme. I mean, these aren't your garden variety officials that go from your league to a YMCA league the next night. I mean, these are the best people that do it.
Oh yeah. Well, that's about all I got. I appreciate you taking the call.
Well, very entertaining. Thank you for the call. Gary is up next in Tennessee. Gary, thanks and good afternoon.
Hey, hello.
Good.
It's good to talk to you, Paul.
Thank you very much. Same here.
I'm Rockwood, Tennessee, about 40 miles south of Knoxville.
Sure.
And I was calling to inquire about Ron Shoemate. He coached basketball at Rockwood and was pretty successful. And then he went to the Moccasins. And I was just wondering if you knew what happened to him or what his story.
I mean, I remember him. Let me see if I can dig up some information on him. But I distinctly remember him coming through the system. I'm trying to remember where he went.
Well, I appreciate it.
I tell you what, let me see if I can look that up, and I'll, if I can come up with the answer, I will let you know. Let me check in next with, who we got, Willard in Georgia. Hey, Willard, thank you, and good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. I just wanted to make a few comments, and thank you for the job that you're doing. But my grandfather was in World War I. And stuff, and being the man he was and stuff like this, I went in service when I was 19, put 20 years in the service, enjoyed it very, very much and stuff. But one thing, hello?
Yeah, Willard, what service were you in?
I was in the Army.
Sure.
But the main comment that I want to make, stuff like this, because you've been talking about women's basketball and stuff. I officiated sports for 11 years. One of the things that has stuck in my mind over the years is women's basketball. Oklahoma was the last school that ever played what you call 3-on-3 half-court basketball. And the reason they changed, because kids in high school and stuff like this was being looked over by colleges because they didn't play full court basketball. And that's one of the comments I wanted to make and stuff like this. So I just wanted to know what your comment would be on that.
Yeah, Ward, I don't, I'm not even sure how to respond to that, because I mean, as others have said, officiating is extremely difficult. I'll defer to others. I mean, I'm not an official. I barely can figure out who's winning a game. Hey, thank you for the call, though. Robert is up next. Hey, Robert, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm 58 years old, played football and basketball, and I agree with the gentleman beforehand. It's absurd. I mean, the guys, I'm certainly no expert, but at the end of the Gonzaga game, and I have no dog in the fight, but if a guard from Oklahoma dips his shoulder and knocks into a guy from Gonzaga, and the guy from Gonzaga falls down, it's either a charge or a foul, and they don't call that, and then they'll run the other way, and there'll be a touch foul, and it's happened the entire first round, and that's all I want to say. There's no rhyme or reason, because nowhere but basketball and soccer do the refs have so much influence over a game. And there's zero rhyme or reason why you can knock someone down and have no call and then run to the other end of the court and have a touch foul and they call a foul. That's all I have to say. If you want to comment, great.
Yeah, no, Robert, I agree with you. I've always tried to stand firm on officials, but you know, just saying that they're doing the best they can is something you would say about your five-year-old playing in Little League baseball. These guys are paid a lot of money. Their calls are determining a great deal as well. And there is no excuse for ineptness or incompetence at the highest level of the game. But unfortunately, we're seeing that in every aspect of this tournament. And that, it starts at the top. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Let's check out Scott, who is up next in Texas. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Paul, how you doing, sir?
We're doing great.
Caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hey, I wanted to call in and kind of chime in on the gentleman that called and was trying to speak about women's basketball and the differences. And I feel like, and I don't want to call anybody ignorant, but we're comparing things, apples and oranges, and looking at what they did to those young ladies, to me, is just ridiculous. And having two young girls that are coming up in the sport playing softball, they're young. Will they be Division I players? I don't have any doubt in my mind they won't be. But, however, there has to be equality in all sports, and they have to have that opportunity when they go and get warmed up. It doesn't matter if they're benching 225. They should have that opportunity to stretch and have that ability.
No, Scott, I agree, and you know, it's one thing. Any organization as big as the NCAA can make a mistake. This does not look like a mistake. This looks like they had a plan that the first round. I mean, and by the way, they're all at the same place too. It's not like they're changing horses. And you know what Emmerich said today, I think, is the most indicting thing that anyone has said yet. He basically said he tried to defend it, saying, "Well, we were going to bring the normal weight room in the next week for the Sweet 16." I mean, first of all, is it overdone a little bit? Yes, but the fact that it was put out there by a player, I think, makes it more compelling. I am not a trainer, but you know, there's only certain amount of, you know, you're probably not going to lift a lot of weights between a Saturday game and a Monday game, but during the week you will. And that was just such a tone deaf comment that Emmerich said. But then again, we should be used to that by now.
I agree. Coach, that's all I got for you. I appreciate you taking my call. And anyone that served in this country as I did as a veteran, I can't say anything enough for anyone, but especially World War I, World War II. Those guys are the greatest generation that we will ever see. What they sacrificed and what they came home to, they made our country better. And I will always be thankful for what they did. And thank you for taking my call.
And thank you for saying that, Scott. So many of us agree with you. We appreciate it. We will take a break. Seth Greenberg joining us in a minute. We'll get his take on what has already happened in the tournament and what still could happen tonight with LSU taking on Michigan in under an hour. We're right back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
We welcome you back. Final 30 minutes of the afternoon, and let's check in with Seth Greenberg now, who is joining us to help us figure out where we are in the NCAA tournament. Seth, great to have you back. We love having you here, and I have to start with the craziness of this tournament. You've been in a lot of NCAA tournaments. You've covered a lot as an analyst. Why is this thing upside down?
You know, Paul, I think there's a lot of reasons. I think first and foremost, this whole season's been upside down. If you think about just the journey the season's taken us on, success is a journey, not a destination. And, you know, this journey has been with pauses. This journey has been with canceled games. This journey has been with games scheduled in the last minute. So I think that's one of the things that's happened during the course of the year. It's been an exhausting season for all involved. Now, in terms of the upsets, I call it the art of the upset. And what I mean by that is if you have a unique style of play, Paul, and you can impose that style of play on your opponent, then that's a huge advantage in the NCAA tournament. Because, like, say, let's take Florida, for example. The Florida kids had no idea who they were playing against. It's very different than league play. When you play in league play, you have an understanding. You've played against those guys before. They have a system in place. You understand exactly how you're going to try to attack it. And even the players, they kind of have an understanding of who they're playing against in terms of people's strengths and weaknesses. And as a coach, you can talk till you're blue in the face. And that's just one example. You can use the same thing across the board, Abilene Christian and beating Texas. So if you have a unique style of play or even the Syracuse 2-3 zone, last night, or Oregon and the experience they have. So I think that's been a big factor. And I think that, right now, the game of basketball, there hasn't been anyone excluding Gonzaga and maybe Baylor that really separated themselves. I think, you put Michigan in that conversation, but now without Livers, I'm not sure they're there. You take 5 through 30, and on any given night, someone could beat anyone else. It's just the way it is. When Power 5 teams beat each other, it's not a surprise to me because they've beaten other people in their league to get to the tournament that are just like the teams they're beating in the NCAA tournament. It's the Oral Robertses and the Abilene Christians. Those are the ones that all of a sudden you say, well, how'd that happen? And I say unique style of play.
Seth, you know what the narratives are. You helped shape some of them, if not a great deal of them, from your perch at ESPN. But the one today over and over again is about the Big Ten. How do you, and I know you've described it in part, but how does a league that was clearly the best all year look so bad right now?
Yeah, they look really bad. And, can I rationalize it? I'm going to start to rationalize it, right? So here's the first going to be the philosophy. Philosophy, they beat each other up all season long. They were worn down while they got to the tournament. Plus, number two is, they had the Big Ten tournament and the Indianapolis teams have been there for 2.5, 3 years. And, just being in that isolated bubble has been hard on them and just hadn't brought out the best in them. The deal is that they got beat. I was surprised. I thought they were the best conference all season long. I thought the quality of basketball played in the Big Ten was different than everyone else. I surely didn't think it was the Pac-12 that was the best conference in college basketball all season long, and they haven't lost a game yet. So, obviously shame on me, but, they got beat by some teams that played up. They got beat some by teams in bad matchups. Like you thought, Wisconsin beats North Carolina. All right, that's a good start. But then when you see what happened to Iowa, unique style of play in Oregon, they extend their defense. They basically ran them off the three-point line. But then game after game after game, I wish I had an answer. I just literally hung up the phone with Tom Izzo, and he's trying to find answers. So, bad matchups probably is the best way to explain it because there's no other way to explain it.
Well, and as bad as it's been, it could get a little bit better, or it could become a DEFCON 1 disaster here in the next few hours. So let's talk about the two games that probably interest our audience the most, starting with the one just around the corner, LSU and the aforementioned Michigan. How does this game play out?
It all comes down to pace of play. The faster the game goes, the better it is for LSU. The slower it is when they can play through Dickinson, the more difficult it will be for LSU to defend. LSU has got to actually impose its will defensively to speed up Michigan. Remember, Michigan's without Livers. And Isaiah Livers, high basketball IQ, great shot maker, terrific cutter, a glue guy in that he has experience, and a solid defender. So what they've got to do is they've got to get the game to go faster. Sean D. Brown is a nice replacement, but they don't have anyone to replace Sean D. Brown. That's going to be an issue for Michigan. But the most important thing is going to be the pressure of LSU. LSU has pros. We've talked about it all year. I call them dudes. They got three dudes that are going to play in the NBA, maybe four in various states. So, like, can they get the game going up and down so that all of a sudden that Michigan can't set their defense, play ahead of Michigan's defense? Can they get the game going up and down in pressure? I used to have this saying when I coached, ball pressure buys time. You want to get the ball to Hunter Dickinson, that's great. If you pressure the ball, then all of a sudden now that guard can't see over it, can't make that entry pass. What does it force Hunter Dickinson to do? Take a step further out. Now all of a sudden you've got him off his spot. Contain the guards, pressure the guards, push basically Michigan's offense out one step further, and it's a huge difference. So pressure and pace of the game are going to be the key to this game. You've got to be committed, LSU. At times, you've shown a commitment defensively. But, you know, you've got to be committed on the defensive end. And it starts with pressure on the ball and pace of the game.
Later game, of course, Alabama and Maryland. What do you see there?
A very simple thing in terms of pace. Obviously, Alabama. People forget how good Alabama is defensively. Well, Maryland is very good defensively as well. Maryland has actually a decent matchup with Herb Jones, which is very few people have. Maryland is built on the defensive end. What they did to Connecticut in taking James Bouknight out of the game was impressive. Now, the difference is Alabama has more weapons. They have more guys that can make buckets. But they're going to pack that defense in one step over the three-point line. All right, they're going to pressure the basketball, and they're going to take away splits. They're going to rely on closing out. They've got good overall length. Now, they've got a lockdown defender, the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, Darryl Marcel. He's what I call a Baltimore guard. I had great Baltimore guards when I was at Virginia Tech. Malcolm Delaney may be one of the best ones. Those guys are tough, fiercely competitive dudes. So I think first and foremost for Alabama is to understand they're going to have to run good offense. They're not going to be up to just drive it on the first side and make a play. They're going to probably have to get a second penetration. They're going to have to be a little bit stronger with the ball. It's a very physical defense that still has the ability to pressure the basketball. Now, I'm interested to see who Marcel ends up defending. Is it going to be Petty? Is it going to be Shackelford? Who's it going to be that, because he's the guy that cuts off, the head of the snake. But they do have very, very good length. They've got very good athleticism. They're undersized, so they actually match up better with an Alabama team that is undersized. The question for Maryland is, at times they get stuck offensively. They're going to need Wiggins to make shots. They're going to need Scott to make shots. And those guys will be really, really important for Maryland to have a chance. But the pace of the game, again, I mean, the more stops that Alabama gets, the more they get out in transition, the more they play ahead of that defense, the more they put Maryland in a scramble situation, the easier it's going to be to score. Because if they get in the half court, Maryland can guard you in the half court. They took Michigan State out both times they played them in the half court. Now, Michigan State doesn't have the dynamic athletes, but I'll tell you what, Connecticut did. So, you know, my goal, and they took out Minnesota, another team that had a dynamic guard in Marcus Carr. So I think that's going to be really important. Then the pressure aspect of it. I thought that Coach Oates did a really good job of dealing with the pressure of that first game. You know, there's an expectation at Alabama now. They're expected to win, and they're expected to advance. So, you know, when I look at this game, I mean, I could see Alabama advancing and getting to the Final Four. To me, this bracket, at least the Elite Eight, they wouldn't if they played FSU. Now that would be an interesting game, but they have an opportunity right now to do something pretty special. But they better put their hard hat on, because one thing about Maryland, they're going to make this thing an absolute rock fight. They're going to make this thing a basically, they're going to play that, this thing in a small box, and they will not back down. That's kind of like their DNA. They've got tough Baltimore, D.C. kids. They're fiercely competitive on the defensive end. That's going to be the challenge. Alabama, as it sounds weird, Paul, they're going to have to compete offensively against a physical Maryland defense.
Finally, on this game, if you're a casual watcher, and many of us won't be casual watching it, if you're looking for trend lines early in the game that are either good or bad for Alabama, what will you be keying on?
Getting stops and getting out in transition. If they're getting stops, because at times Maryland can get stuck, they got to guard Wiggins and Ayala. Because Ayala, as he goes, that team goes offensively. But those two guys are very, very important for Maryland. And then the third guy would be Dante Scott. Don't let him get step in and shoot threes. He's a big, they pull away from the basket, which opens up the floor. But Eric Ayala is a big physical. He's a 6'6 point guard. And he's got a physicality to him. And Aaron Wiggins is a long, rangy hybrid forward. Those guys have good matchups with Alabama. If you let those guys get going early, that's not good for Alabama. If you can contain those guys early, and you saw what they did in their first game, I mean, shoot against Connecticut. They absolutely killed them from the three-point line. You've got to lock in defending and contain those two. You contain those through, and Maryland doesn't have enough options to score to match the scoring, basically, depth of this Alabama team.
Seth, finally, the big picture. Brackets are busted. That's beside the point. But if you're looking at, you know, four teams, you know, from different regions that look like a better bet today than a week ago, Gonzaga, Baylor, are they still safe? And I'm curious about the rest of the field.
Yeah, I think Baylor and Gonzaga are fairly safe. The Midwest region is just, who knows? I mean, you know, you look who's left. You've got Syracuse left, who barely made it into the tournament. You've got Oregon State left. You've got Loyola Chicago left. No one thought those teams were going to be alive. Then you got Houston, who survived the Rutgers team. So I think the Midwest region is absolutely wide open. And I also think that the East, I mean, it works its way for Alabama. Here's my concern. My concern is Florida State. Florida State is dangerous because Florida State's got great athleticism. They're an improved offensive team. They're a switching defensive team, and they have the ability to switch and keep you in front. Now, they do have a propensity to turn the ball over, which would be obviously to Alabama's advantage. But, you know, I look at their bracket. I don't think Michigan's coming out of that bracket. I don't think Michigan, without Livers, over the next two weekends or three games, that depth factor is eventually going to rear its head. It just, Livers is so good. He's a great leader, a great cutter, a shot maker, and he's a guy that brings people together. So now it's going to put a lot of pressure on Michael Smith. So, you know, I think Alabama gets out of there if they can get through Florida State. That's my gut feeling.
Great stuff. We always enjoy it. We appreciate you coming on. We deeply are in your debt. Thank you, Seth. Enjoy it.
And thanks for having me, Paul.
Catch you again soon. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.